to Rise to Offend, a podcast that explores people who rose to offend in society and their legacy today. I'm your host, Petr Spych, and this week we begin the story of the Me Too movement, a movement that sparked a cultural revolution in the world, changing the dynamics between people in and out of the workplace and taking many high-profile and powerful people out of their positions. Starting in 2006 by Tarana Burke, the message and goals were changed in 2017 when actress Alyssa Milano tweeted about people healing through social media and causing a social change by many, witch hunts by some, and healing and hurting for the majority. Now, when talking about a sensitive topic that our opinions may cause hurt to listeners due to our biases as people, I want to give anybody who was a victim that may be affected by these words a quick disclaimer. We will try to be fair, but we also will discuss the negatives and positives. If you ever heard the Colin Kaepernick episode, I believe the biases we have are on display there as we try to cover all angles. But I also want to present with you a quote by T.S. Eliot that was said more than half a century ago that has always stayed with me when looking at a protester. And depending on how these words affect you, you should make your decision if you want to keep listening. Half the harm that is done in the world is due to people who want to feel important. They don't mean to do harm, but the harm does not interest them, or they do not see it, or they justify because they are absorbed in the endless struggle to think well of themselves.
It is wonderful to be celebrated, but we can't get caught up in the celebration of me as an individual if we aren't going to interrogate why I was led to do this work in the first place. I'm an organizer first, and I believe wholeheartedly in the power of our collective movement. We have to have an honest conversation, Black folks, about what is happening in our communities. Sexual violence is rampant, and we have to break this culture of silence so that we can do the work of interrupting it wherever it lives. It is estimated that 22% of Black women will experience sexual assault in their lifetime. That's 22%. That's a huge number. And it's not that many of us. But here's another one you may not know. If a Black woman is sexually assaulted before she's 18, she is 66% more likely to be sexually assaulted again as an adult. We need to sit with those numbers. We need to sit with that reality. And it's not just women. I so appreciate those brothers standing up, these young brothers standing up and making that pledge, but we have to pledge to protect our boys as much as our girls. 1 in 6 boys will be sexually assaulted before 18, and it's a disproportionate number of Black boys who fit into that number. But we can change this. The work of the Me Too movement is not about Hollywood. It's not about taking down powerful men, and it's not about hating men. I love brothers. Just in case y'all didn't know. Let me tell you, it's very hard to date when you represent something like Me Too. All the brothers is like, sister, I just wanna. Y'all don't gotta be scared, just be respectful.
And joining me this week, as always, guys, Brandon Gooch Hahn and Jocelyn Sharp. In 2006, a social activist and community organizer named Tarana Burke began using the phrase Me Too on the social network site MySpace. And the phrase was used for empowerment through empathy among women of color who have experienced sexual abuse, primarily within underprivileged communities.
But it's not about hating men. It's about supporting survivors of sexual violence and providing resources to those who have the least access to the tools for healing. This is a movement about healing. This is a movement about giving the people who have been holding the trauma in the pit of their stomach for most of their lives a space to release that and to heal. All of this work that we have to do to cure our community, we can't do that if we are holding on to this trauma. We have to heal. And that's what this work is about. It's about interrupting sexual violence wherever it exists.
She laid out specific goals for the Me Too movement, which are the following. Processing all untested rape kits in the United States. As of that time in 2006 in America, there was an estimate of 400,000 untested rape kits.
It felt like getting my message right in this moment was more important than anything. And so I searched and searched for days on end, trying to find the right configuration of words. And although intellectually I could bullet point the big ideas that I wanted to share about Me Too and this movement that I founded, I kept finding myself falling short of finding the heart. I wanted to pour myself into this moment and tell you why even the possibility of healing or interrupting sexual violence was worth standing and fighting for. I wanted to rally you to your feet with an uplifting speech about the important work of fighting for the dignity and humanity of survivors. But I don't know if I have it.
Investigate the vetting of teachers at schools to better protect children from predators in underprivileged areas, and updating training and policy in workplaces, places of worship, and schools to educate and show empathy towards how helpless sexual harassment can make someone feel in those environments.
The reality is, after soldiering through the Supreme Court nomination process and attacks from the White House, gross mischaracterizations, internet trolls, and the rallies and marches and heart-wrenching testimonies, I'm faced with my own hard truth. I'm numb. And I'm not surprised. I've traveled all across the world giving talks, and like clockwork, after every event, more than one person approaches me so that they can say their piece in private. And I always try to reassure them. You know, I give them local resources and a soft reassurance that they're not alone and this is their movement too. I tell them that we're stronger together and that this is a movement of survivors and advocates doing things big and small every day. And more people are joining this movement every single day. That part is clear. People are putting their bodies on the line and raising their voices to say enough is enough. So why do I feel this way? Well, someone with credible accusations of sexual violence against him was confirmed to the Supreme Court of the United States of America. Again. The U.S. president, who was caught on tape talking about how he can grab women's body parts wherever he wants, however he wants, can call a survivor a liar at one of his rallies and the crowds will roar. And all across the world where Me Too has taken off, Australia and France, Sweden, China, and now India, survivors of sexual violence are all at once being heard and then vilified. This movement is constantly being called a watershed moment, or even a reckoning. But I wake up some days feeling like all evidence points to the contrary. It's hard not to feel numb. I suspect some of you may feel numb too.
How important is having a specific goal and focus to a movement for it to gain a positive social change?
It's incredibly important because movements can be bastardized very quickly. They can be used for monetary gain. They can be used for everything except for what their original intention was. And we see that over and over and over again with movements in our culture. We live in a capitalistic society. As soon as anything gains any popularity, people come out of the woodwork figuring out how they can make money off of it. This is a valid plan. These things all make a lot of sense when she's talking about better training in the workplace for sexual harassment. All sexual harassment training for years was geared at, here's how you don't get in trouble. You know, like, here's how, even if you think someone's hot, you don't, but it's never been geared towards, here's what you do if you are sexually harassed. Here's how you handle it if you are sexually harassed. There's a lot of problems in all of these infrastructures that she's pointing out, and having this clear goal, having a clear vision and direction in anything, business, life, anything, is the only way to get to the finish line.
Our goal was really to work with black and brown girls in the South around who are survivors of sexual violence to speak healing into their lives, to let them know that healing was possible and let them know that they weren't alone. And it just grew from there. It grew from working with young girls to grown women. We realized, oh, we're survivors of sexual violence, so there's others like us. And it's really been focused on what survivors need to
start a healing process. That's really what the heart of our movement has been about. And also working to end sexual violence.
And if you look at this world that we live in now, mm-hmm. the Me Too movement has become synonymous with men being brought down.
Right.
I often hear people say the phrase, oh, Me Too claims another victim or another win for Me Too. Do you think that's the right way to frame it? Do you think maybe people are missing the point of what Me Too is meant to inspire?
Absolutely. It feels like playing whack-a-mole after a while, right?
Right.
It's like, who's the next person Me Too is going to take down? And that's not really our focus. If, as a byproduct of people coming forward and telling their truth, then there's justice that happens, there's some kind of resolution that happens
from that,
then that's fine. But our goal is really to support the survivors and to make sure survivors are in a place of leadership in the work to end sexual violence. It's not about taking down powerful men. And it's not a woman's movement either. That's another sort of misconception. It's a movement for survivors.
And the best part, too, in this situation, when you're just starting out with this goal, it's a lot easier for other people to understand the goal because you're the only one controlling the narrative. It's when you start bringing in other people is when the narrative of that goal starts to get ADD and start going in 100 different directions. Now, all of a sudden, all these other things start getting added into it, and the original goal is completely lost.
I mean, yes, there is always that danger. But when we look at the statistics of how many people come forward and falsely accuse a man of these kinds of sexual misconduct, it's a very, very small, minuscule amount. And that's you get even smaller when you go to the fact that 70 to 80% of women don't even report. So we're looking at a very small amount. And I would also add that less than 1% actually are prosecuted. Mm. Less than 1% of rapists are prosecuted.
And empowerment through empathy. That was what the phrase stood for. And that, in a lot of ways, is being like, you know what? We're going to have you learn. And then you're going to feel how they feel. And then that's going to make you realize, whoa, I see how this is wrong.
Actual change of the roles of society is what her goal was. Actual fundamental change. It wasn't about taking down people. It was about educating our society and changing the way our culture views sexuality and the roles between the sexes.
And also educating predators, because half of them probably didn't even know they were doing wrong. A lot of them were like, what? I don't even know, you know? So it's like you all of a sudden show these people what they're doing wrong, and then all of a sudden you paint a picture of what that action did to that victim and how that victim felt as a result of that. Then all of a sudden the guy gets a totally different point of view.
And not to say there's not a great percentage of those people who will be educated through that system and go, fuck them still at the end of it.
Absolutely.
And right. And that's how we weed out those people. But you don't immediately, you know, this is the empathy is the big thing for me. We should have empathy for everyone.
Like, there's so many women in the world and girls, and including myself, that are not really sure if they were raped or not. And probably a lot of guys that maybe don't know if they raped or not.
Understanding a victim's quest to take power back from those who took power away from them was a thin line and something that could affect the movement. So taking out that emotional element and focusing on a plan to attack specific scenarios seemed to give the movement a direct vision of change and positive. The end result of the initial movement was to change and protect future victims.
And then there's the backlash. We've all heard it. The Me Too movement is a witch hunt, right? Me Too is dismantling due process. Or Me Too has created a gender war. The media has been consistent with headline after headline that frames this movement in ways that make it difficult to move our work forward. And right-wing pundits and other critics have these talking points that shift the focus away from survivors. So suddenly, a movement that was started to support all survivors of sexual violence is being talked about like it's a vindictive plot against men. And I'm like, huh? How did we get here?
The most difficult portion of the movement was the culture that Burke represented, and that was minority women. To this day, there is a lack of minority women represented in the movement or seen in a leadership role by the media. Undocumented minority workers, for example, often have no recourse if they're experiencing sexual violence, in work industries like hotels, retail, or even food service. All those industries had a great number of sexual violent claims. This was a priority of the original movement to protect and shine a light on those people who had less power.
How do we dismantle these systems that are in place? How do we interrupt them so that sexual violence is not allowed to flourish? We see the numbers and we hear the effects of it. And now, like, what do we do, both as survivors, because I think survivors have to lead that charge, and as people who are allies of survivors and or bystanders or whatever, need to be involved in that conversation. And I also think that we have to have a conversation about what survivors need, right? Like, this is a moment that is, it is beautiful, but it's also very painful. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've also received, like, a lot of feedback and messages from people who are like, I've been severely triggered by this, mm-hmm. by this moment. Mm-hmm. And so we need to look at what healing looks like in our community, right? Like, we have a charge and a obligation and responsibility to interrupt sexual violence wherever we can. But at the same time, every day, even as we're fighting the good fight to do that, there are new survivors every day, every moment, mm-hmm. right? The statistics tell us that. And so we need to also think about, like, what does radical community healing look like for us? Like, we should know, this should just be an expectation for teachers and community people, and that when you interact, if I'm in a room of 10 people, like, for children, the statistic is 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys. So we know that we are constantly surrounded by survivors. So, like, what do we need to do to shift the way we interact in the world and in our communities to start thinking about what healing looks like for our children and for ourselves?
Also, in African American communities, there was a large faction and groups trafficking women in certain areas and communities. The mantra of stop snitching was putting young women of poverty in forcible prostitution. A former victim named Farah Tanis, and an activist of this movement, stated there are barriers for black women because of the social pressures not to report allegations against black men, especially in powerful positions like church or family, because many would view it as a betrayal against their, quote, brothers, unquote.
But the issue is not just about R. Kelly. The way that he makes his money is through his music and through performances. If we continue to support him, he uses that money to the detriment of these black and brown girls that he's been preying on for 20 years. And it's about making sure he doesn't have the resources to do that, but it's also because he symbolizes a greater thing. There are R. Kellys in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our schools, in our churches. He represents a thing that we can't touch. We can't stop. We cannot. Right. We cannot get people to pay attention to the plight of sexual violence against black and brown girls. And R. Kelly is a perfect example of it.
It's interesting because I see these parallels across many, many groups. You know, there isn't one particular group where there is more praying or there is more sexual assault.
Right.
It feels like you find this across cultures. But one thing I've come, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I've come to find that predominantly in cultures of color, there is an idea that we shouldn't speak about these
Absolutely.
Things. I remember growing up, you know, if an uncle was accused of abusing a young girl, then the girl would get into trouble. Mm-hmm. How do you begin these conversations in communities of color? How do you get people on your side and realize that the community has to work from the inside?
I feel like, I've said this before, we have to be able to hold two truths at the same time, or more than one truth, right? And I'll speak about the black community specifically. I think in the black community, we are so focused on the fact that there's a true history of black men being falsely accused of rape and sexual violence in this country. That's true. There's
right.
no question about it. History, you know, supports that. But it's also true that in every community, the people who commit sexual violence, except for the Native community, by and large, are from that community.
Right.
And so if that's true and we know that black women are sexually assaulted and victims of sexual violence, then it happens by and large at the hands of black men. And so we have to unravel this idea that we have to be silent to protect our men and we have to protect our community from this.
11 years after the movement began and worked towards these specific social and community goals, actress Alyssa Milano encouraged spreading stories of workplace sexual harassment, and this drew attention to it by using Burke's phrase and erecting hashtag MeToo on social media, specifically on Twitter.
Thousands of women are using two words on social media to identify themselves as survivors of sexual harassment and assault today. It's hashtag Me Too. Actress Alyssa Milano shared the idea on Twitter, and it quickly went viral. Sheryl Brown is a social media presenter for CBC, and she's been following this story. Sheryl, first of all, give us the situation, about this. What is this hashtag about?
Well, as you mentioned, Alyssa Milano got the ball rolling on Sunday when she issued a tweet that she said was inspired by a friend. The post that she tweeted reads, "If all the women who've been sexually harassed or assaulted wrote Me Too as a status, we might give people a sense of the magnitude of the problem." Now, as we've seen since, many women replied Me Too. Many notables, Alyssa Milano, as you know, has been working in Hollywood since she was a child in the 80s, and so many of her Hollywood contemporaries chimed in with their simple Me Toos, like pop star Lady Gaga, Canadian actress Tatiana Maslany, and Deborah Messing from Will and Grace, just to name a few.
Okay, it's been more than 24 hours now, or almost 24 hours since she's call out. How has the conversation changed?
Well, for starters, it's grown. Twitter says that in the 24 hours since noon yesterday and noon today Eastern, there have been more than 500,000 tweets that have used the hashtag MeToo. And as you've likely seen on your own Facebook or Instagram feeds, all different kinds of people are pitching in with their personal stories, including some that say that the conversation isn't really complete. For example, New York writer Alexis Benvenista suggested that despite this big outpouring and this big response, likely many women stayed quiet. She had this statement on Twitter earlier, a reminder that if a woman didn't post Me Too, it doesn't mean that she wasn't sexually assaulted or harassed, she said. Survivors don't owe you their stories.
Now, Burke's goals and specific purposes in the Me Too movement were defined for a culture in trouble and had a defined purpose of speaking for victims that could not speak for themselves. What did Alyssa Milano do when taking the movement phrase to a social media platform?
I think a white chick hijacked it. That's what happened. Because all of a sudden they see a white woman on there using Me Too. Now, the original intent of trying to get, you know, women of color, you know, try and give them a voice. Now it's everybody, which lowers the voice of the women of color because now everyone's included in this.
Well, instead of amplifying the signal of Tarana Burke's original message, whether it be as simple as quote retweeting it and saying you guys should follow her, she's talking about great things. Instead of that, she decided to garble up the message, regurgitate it as her own thing, and then has now made it this thing where it's like, if you want to be supportive of this movement, you just have to put hashtag Me Too. Whereas all these people, most people, when they saw hashtag Me Too, at the point it got to the viral point, thought it was only about like if you've been sexually assaulted. You know, if you've been sexually assaulted, this movement is for you. And now all she's done is she's watered it down so specifically and brought us to this point where now it's not about the movement. It's not about the cause of what it's for. Now it's about each individual getting a voice in a moment.
So the hashtag has been about showing the numbers, right? Mm-hmm. I think when Alyssa Milano tweeted it out and it was initially the woman who wrote the first, like, if this happened to you, change your status to Me Too, was about showing the sheer number and the sheer magnitude of people who are affected. And they've been successful in that, right? It's like millions and millions of engagement with Me Too across social media. But initially, it was really about a conversation between survivors. Mm-hmm. It was about me as a survivor saying to you that I see you and I hear you and I understand you. And so I think that both the outward facing and the inward facing message is so powerful, right? There's now this evidence and data that is undeniable, that mm-hmm. this is prevalent, it is pervasive, it is epidemic across the world, sexual violence, the spectrum of sexual violence. And at the same time, there is this community of people who understand each other and who know that they have support in some way, even if a very small way. Mm-hmm.
Many high-profile women did come forward after this and voice their experiences with sexual harassment, assault, and even rape. And the leaders of that came forward were, like Alyssa Milano, wealthy, highly visible women in news and entertainment. And they also were white. Just to name a few, it was Taylor Swift, Gwyneth Paltrow, Ashley Judd, Jennifer Lawrence, Rose McGowan, Uma Thurman, and Asia Argento. Now, if all those women took money and donated it to the original cause, it would have been a completely different backing. but they also use their celebrity to get focus up on them.
I don't know how to start this. I guess I would say in relation to the Me Too experience, I think everybody has experienced it. I think for so long, and what I'm noticing from people who I'm hearing their stories, we've minimized what we think is sexual harassment, and now people are more aware of, I hate to say it, this rape culture that we live in and that we've perpetuated as a society, and I'm glad it's actually coming to light and people are being held accountable.
If highly wealthy and successful women are dealing with sexual harassment, what do you think happens to the voiceless women in the poorer jobs? And does these actors moving the focus away from them a disservice to the original movement?
Now, this is where things get complicated, because there's a lot of positive things that come out of these women coming forward. There's tons and tons and tons and endless lists of positive things from these women coming forward. But now we've taken a left turn. Now what the original movement's intent is, we've now taken a left turn to where, yes, these wealthy women had terrible experiences and they should speak about it, but it shouldn't be just about them, because you have millions of dollars and a huge audience. Now, what about the woman who works a part-time job and she's getting sexually harassed every day? Where's her voice? When she speaks up on Twitter, do you think that she's going to have a million people backing her, or do you think she's going to get fired? What have you done? You've not supported the cause. You've supported your own voice being heard. Let me tell my story. Let me tell my thing. Well, why don't, instead of you telling your story, or even tell your story, but still remember what the cause is about and go back and find out what you're talking about, because there's millions of women who don't have your voice, who don't have your platform, and who don't have your safety net, who will continue to get sexually harassed this day.
I don't know if I have words really needed to express how deeply honored I am with folks who I admire, like Cicely Tyson and one of my heroes, Reverend Barber, who I in fact met for the first time in Selma, I don't know how many years ago, with one of my mentors, Fire Rose Touré. Yes, I wouldn't be here without her. There's been a lot of talk about me not receiving recognition I deserve for founding Me Too. But I have to tell you, and my friends in the room can attest to this, and I got a bunch of friends back there. Hi! Akiba, Karina, Demetria. Anyway, my friends can tell you nothing means more to me than being recognized by my folks. I love everything about being Black. And it's that love that let me start doing this work. It's what led me to do the work.
Now the voice has been hijacked by rich, successful, popular white women. They totally jacked it from women of color in underappreciated neighborhoods.
Yeah.
You know, and the group that really needs the spotlight shine on them. Not happening anymore. Now it's back to Hollywood.
Categorically true for history, though, is that, you know, minorities and poverty groups are always the ones that get shunned when it comes to these things. Although these movements might be born in minorities and poverty groups because of the struggle of them, it is so easy for our culture to take on that cause. And it's the virtue signaling we see today. Well, let me show you that this is a badge I wear, that I support this cause, but now you've somehow made it about you.
Rose McGowan, she is one of the women who ignited the Me Too movement, calling out the man she says sexually assaulted her. She says she is a victim, but also a survivor. We're going to speak to Rose in just a moment, but first, her story.
She was one of the first to sound the alarm in Hollywood.
For Weinstein, it has been a swift and severe fall from grace.
A new fallout from the Harvey Weinstein scandal.
In a role she thought she'd never find herself in, Rose McGowan leading the charge against movie mogul Harvey Weinstein.
I have been silenced for 20 years. I have been slut-shamed. I have been harassed. I have been maligned. And you know what? I'm just like you.
McGowan accusing the once powerful producer of sexual assault in 1997, saying her life was hijacked. Determined to find her voice, McGowan took to Twitter last October to publicly call out Weinstein, tweeting, "HW raped me." Her series of tweets helping empower almost 100 other women to come forward about Weinstein's behavior.
Rose right here, Rose.
Igniting a movement. Hashtag Rose Army. McGowan also putting all of Hollywood on notice for anyone who may have known about or enabled Weinstein's behavior. Overnight, Weinstein's rep releasing a statement reading, "Mr. Weinstein denies Rose McGowan's allegations of non-consensual sexual contact, and it is erroneous and irresponsible to conflate claims of inappropriate behavior and consensual sexual conduct later regretted with an untrue claim of rape.
With the movement, the storyline continued, and it did have a main villain at this point who was tied to the new leaders at the movement, and that was film mogul Harvey Weinstein, who throughout his film career would allegedly sexually harass actresses and use his power to ruin their careers if they did not adhere to his sexual advances. Something powerful men and women have done throughout Hollywood's history.
A lot of victims and survivors will say they detach, you know, and you really do. You float up above your body because you're trying to figure out your, my brain was actually literally when he grabbed me, I was thinking, oh, I hope I still have lipstick on for the camera. So your brain's in another place and all of a sudden your body is like, what? And this is not what I expected at 10 in the morning. You know, and my then manager got a job with him for 7 years after that. You do the math. 3 years ago, I was like, okay, let's go. Let's get smarter. 10%. I wonder if I can change the world by 10%. That was my goal.
10%.
Burke's Me Too movement, started in 2006, was to empower women through empathy, especially young and vulnerable women who had no voice or options due to social issues and survival. Has shifting the focus away from minority issues and untested rape kits to powerful men like taking down Harvey Weinstein hurt Burke's movement?
No, I don't think it hurt it. I think it ultimately it adds to it. But again, you're adding too much to the original movement. So when you keep adding so much to a movement, all of a sudden it's firing in so many different directions. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. Like if you put like a funnel on the end of a hose, okay? And you shoot the water out the front, okay? Well, the water's going to go far. But if you punch two holes on the sides of it, now it's going in three different directions, and now the stream falls just short. That's what's happening right now. You're trying to solve too many problems at once.
So I contacted my supervisor, and I said, you know, this is what happened. I just want you to know. And she told me, oh, we've had complaints about this type of thing with him before.
Really just started the asking the company to move me. And he was important enough in the company that they didn't want to do that.
The power of silence protects perpetrators and protects a system. And the only thing that combats silence is speaking up.
So I decided to put it on Facebook because I felt like it was just time for women to speak up.
And so for me, I found real power in saying, you know what, this happened to me too.
Well, I also think that what happened was, is, and what will often happen is that people will hear the narrative they want to hear. And there was a lot of people who heard this as their shot to get their voice out there, get their story heard. And consequently, it morphed the movement and it transformed it. It took it from one thing and made it into another. I don't know that most people will know the story of Tarana Burke when it comes to Me Too. I don't think that they'll be able to tell you where it came from. I don't think they'll be able to tell you the origins. I think that all most people will be able to talk to you about is Harvey Weinstein.
We have moved so far away from the origins of this movement that started a decade ago, or even the intentions of the hashtag that started just a year ago, that sometimes the Me Too movement that I hear some people talk about is unrecognizable to me. But be clear, this is a movement about the 1 in 4 girls and the 1 in 6 boys who are sexually assaulted every year and carry those wounds into adulthood. It's about the 84% of trans women who will be sexually assaulted this year, and the indigenous women who are 3.5 times more likely to be sexually assaulted than any other group. Or people with disabilities who are 7 times more likely to be sexually abused. It's about the 60% of black girls like me who will be experiencing sexual violence before they turn 18. And the thousands and thousands of low-wage workers who are being sexually harassed right now on jobs that they can't afford to quit. This is a movement about the far-reaching power of empathy. And so it's about the millions and millions of people who 1 year ago raised their hands to say, me too, and their hands are still raised. while the media that they consume erases them. And politicians who they elected to represent them pivot away from solutions. It's understandable that the push-pull of this unique historical moment feels like an emotional roller coaster that has rendered many of us numb. This accumulation of feelings that so many of us are experiencing together across the globe is collective trauma. But it is also the first step towards actively building a world that we want right now. What we do with this thing that we're all holding is the evidence that this is bigger than a moment. It's the confirmation that we are in a movement. And the most powerful movements have always been built around what's possible, not just claiming what is right now. Trauma halts possibility. Movement activates it.
The scenario of debate and controversy behind the new twist to the Me Too movement, which was now hashtag Me Too, is it did not have defined purposes. And it was just putting a blanket on social media. Its popularity would go many different avenues, from labor issues due to economic disadvantages of women, from repeating harassment to social pressures to victims, putting pressure on them to publicly address sexual harassment on a social platform, and the experiences, and if they didn't get the response they wanted, in essence, re-traumatizing the victims.
You know, so when you hear stories about women not coming forward and how dare they, I definitely can feel for them and have empathy that that's not something top of mind that you want to talk about. It's, you open yourself up for judgment and scrutiny and shame and guilt around it. And then once you haven't told for so long, time goes on and goes on and goes on, and you're like, well, what point do I tell this story, and then why would it matter?
And the heavy emotion and personalization of social media would create fatigue and outrage to many instead of communication, and also create a form of androphobia, which is the fear of adult men in society. The hashtag MeToo movement did not examine the worst type of abuse, and by not defining a purpose, many felt cast men in society as perpetrators.
The movement, the work that I'm doing and this movement is really about survivors talking to survivors, right? Me Too is about using the power of empathy to stomp out shame. And so we need to keep talking about it, right? It doesn't need to be, I mean, I appreciate the hashtag and I appreciate the hashtag elevating the conversation, but it's not a hashtag, right? It's not a moment. This is a movement. The reason why people didn't know my name is because people don't think about this unless there is something big happening. So what needs to happen is that we need to stop just, you know, popping up when somebody famous does something, and we need to really look at the numbers, look at the people, look at the survivors, and think strategically. I think like an organizer.
Now, did creating a social media protest damage the meaning and message in any way?
Yeah, I mean, of course it will. That's the way that the internet works. You know, it's a giant game of telephone that you play with the entire world.
And on top of that, too, these are angry people that are responding. And when you're not going to get a level-headed answer from any of them. You're just going to have all these people that are going to put out their message, but it's going to be an extreme version because they're angry.
Well, and I can tell you, I am a victim of sexual assault, and I have said in several conversations with people I've had since this Me Too movement is that if you're expecting complete and total objectivity from me, you're not going to get one. Number one, I grew up as a woman in this society. Number two, I am a victim of sexual assault. My feelings, my viewpoint, all of these things are going to be so different from what most people who haven't been through those things are. You know what I mean? It's not ever going to be rational. And I don't expect myself to be rational because I deserve not to be being a victim of that. And that's what people didn't understand. That's what people still don't understand, is that you're asking for rationale and logic in a thing that has nothing to do with anything except for violence and oppression.
And back to Pete's point, too, when he was talking about some of these women that were probably holding on to this story to their chest and they never wanted to reveal it. And then they do reveal it and they're expecting, you know, welcome to the sisterhood, and it doesn't happen. Then it all of a sudden it makes them feel even worse.
Right.
I was in a relationship with a guy and I was not ready to be intimate with him. And he just kept pushing and pushing, and he would get angry every time I'd tell him no. And eventually it started becoming more and more serious, and he would get aggressive, and so I finally broke off the relationship. And that was my only experience.
With this movement and meaning evolving away from the original purpose, and those purposes do get a spotlight and addressed in a positive way. I just want to say one more time, there's many positive things that came from this movement, but the media and social media spotlight, it became a debate and in the worst possible format, which would be communicating on social media, causing people that had power to get noticed and healed in a lot of ways, but people that did not have power to feel unimportant and less important. This movement was not about Hollywood, but somehow it became about Hollywood.
Backlash to the Me Too movement erupted in January after Babe.net published an anonymous woman's account of a date with Aziz Ansari. According to the woman, identified as Grace, Ansari persistently tried to initiate sex during the date, despite her verbal and nonverbal cues that she did not consent. Many were quick to claim Grace's story could hurt the Me Too movement.
All the gains that have been achieved on your behalf and mine are now being compromised by the allegations that you threw out there.
Aziz's career has not come to an end since the article was published.
Now here's a scenario that people wrote in a popular magazine that was trying to be used in the wake of the movement to have an understanding. There's three outcomes to this, and we will debate it here on the show. Number one, a 20-year-old female goes on a date with a much older man, say he's 40. The man pressures the woman to have sex in his vehicle. Her vehicle was not near, and she needed him to drop him off to where her car was located. Outcome number one, the woman says no, and the man tries more verbally to convince her, but she denies him, and he drives her back to the car. Outcome number two, she initially says no, and then after further convincing, gives the male consent to act. Despite having reservations, performs the act, goes back to her car, and drives home, upset at herself because of what transpired. And outcome number three, she says no, and the man uses force to take what he wants, and then drives her to her home, shaming her all the way, and convincing her it was her fault. Now, outcome number one and number three would get lost and lose power because of the strong debate of outcome number two, which many consider in the scenario, the person in power is the man, and the young vulnerable female, although consenting in some fashion, was a victim of rape.
Now this morning, 1.5 million tweets and 13.5 million posts, comments, and reactions on Facebook and Twitter. Some of the top employment law firms in the country tell ABC News they're seeing a significant increase in inquiries related to sexual harassment. One firm says calls have tripled.
Is it dangerous to not focus on outcome number three as the primary villain in the male culture, lumping outcome number two and three together? And are both those outcomes the same?
I think boxing sexuality into a weird word problem is the problem. I think that it's more complicated than that. I can tell you that in a lot of the conversations I've had with other victims, and in my case in particular, a lot of the time you acquiesce because your life is in danger. If you're a 5'4" woman and this 40-year-old man is 6'2", he can kill you with his bare hands. And that's just kind of the long and the short of it. And people don't understand that it's a lot more complicated than, well, did you say no? It's not that easy. It's not that easy. You can't blanket it. You can't chop it up into these blocks and make it like, let's discuss all these different outcomes, because you're giving me three outcomes when there's 1.5 billion to the 10th power.
Just recently, I was in an Uber on my way home. I had had some drinks and I kind of dozed off. I made the mistake of sitting in the front seat. And the guy that was driving, my Uber driver, actually reached over and put his hand up my dress. Speak up, report it. I mean, it's happening to more than, you know, just me or anyone like near me. It's happening everywhere. So speak up and don't be scared or embarrassed.
Rarely does this happen when the woman, where there's sex, the sex is actually consensual, but then she gets upset and then she wants to throw him under the bus. But all I'm saying is like, that one tiny, tiny percentage point ruins so much.
Yeah, I mean, just like in all society, we have to figure out how to deal with them on an individual basis. Just like all men aren't rapists, all rape victims aren't liars.
But when you process this through social media, outcome number two can be a healing process, where outcome number three cannot. And by selling it to someone to be like, yeah, just share what happened to you, when it's something that you need deep therapy for. You guys see how that can be very damaging to someone.
Especially when outcome number two mm-hmm. is being treated the same as outcome number three. That's where the victims are just kind of like, whoa, hold mm-hmm. on a second here. Like, this is not at all the same thing that happened to me that happened to this other victim.
Not to invalidate their experience, not to say that your experience, right. Maybe I wasn't there. I wasn't in the room. Maybe it was so aggressively emotionally manipulative that it's not crazy to think that people have been convinced to kill other people. Like, it's not crazy right. to think that you can emotionally manipulate someone to have sex with you. I'm not invalidating that experience, but what I'm saying is that we can't blanket every sexual assault with one box, because every sexual assault is individual on each and every experience. Because in order to psychologically understand it, you have to take in both people's background. How did they get in that situation? How well do they know each other? Like, there's so many things that go into what happens in these things that, and again, look at us here. All we're talking about is the rape and the sexual assault part of it. When this movement was started to talk about the fact that there's victims out there who don't have justice, and instead we're doing the thing that has been going on for years. We're discussing what the definition of rape is instead of figuring out how to get justice.
My vision for the Me Too movement is a part of a collective vision to see a world free of sexual violence. And I believe we can build that world, full stop. But in order to get there, we have to dramatically shift a culture that propagates the idea that vulnerability is synonymous with permission, and that bodily autonomy is not a basic human right. In other words, we have to dismantle the building blocks of sexual violence: power and privilege. So much of what we hear about the Me Too movement is about individual bad actors or depraved, isolated behavior. And it fails to recognize that anybody in a position of power comes with privilege, and it renders those without that power more vulnerable. Teachers and students, coaches and athletes, law enforcement and citizen, parent and child. These are all relationships that can have an incredible imbalance of power. But we reshape that imbalance by speaking out against it in unison and by creating spaces to speak truth to power. We have to re-educate ourselves and our children to understand that power and privilege doesn't always have to destroy and take. It can be used to serve and build.
And I think that's what got lost in the message, is that outcome number three was never, ever, ever okay. Ever. You know, outcome number one was, but outcome number two,
there's a gray area.
There is a gray area. And that's what I think hashtag MeToo was trying to change.
Yes.
To be like, there's not a gray area, because if you are in power in any scenario, like in that scenario where it's like you have to drive this girl to her car and you're pressuring her to have sex, and she's like, okay, well, I just want to get to my car. If there's anything that's a motivating factor besides I want to have sex with you, that should be considered sexual assault.
I think things are getting better. I think that there is now a precedent for reporting sexual misconduct and abuses. I think that women are supporting each other a lot more. And I think that goes across the board. I think that we were really made to believe in every industry that if you wanted to succeed, women had to compete with one another. And I think that we're realizing now that our strength is really in supporting one another.
It's easy to not generalize, but we all do it. So what I am trying to say is when this one guy has learned, okay, maybe I should be a little more aggressive, like don't be afraid to kiss, you know what I mean? Don't be afraid to make a move, you know, but there are guys that take it way beyond that. It's like once the challenge is met, like I was saying, by this chick, now all of a sudden he's a stupid young guy. He's like 17, 18 years old, probably only been with one or two women, and this is what he's being taught. How do we reprogram that?
But that's what I think empowerment through empathy, the original cause. There you reprogram it,
which
by
has been lost
people.
By this.
You
point.
Have to teach. This is the whole point, and this is it's been muddied because in social media you can't communicate genuinely or authentically because you can't see people's faces, you can't hear tone of voice, you can't look them in the eye, you can't feel their energy. That's just the way it is. You'll never be able to communicate authentically via social media because you can't. You cannot communicate authentically with somebody only over text message, only over comments, only over email. You can't see their face, you can't hear their voice. So there's no way for you to know what the intent of that person to be. When in reality, we should be recognizing that we obviously have a problem in our society with educating men and people of power, how their power and their masculinity affects the people that it can affect.
I talk about all the time, like, it's so interesting to me that my kid in school learns that if his clothes catch on fire, that he should stop, drop, and roll. But there's nothing teaching our kids in school the protocol of gender equality and what that means, and decency and respect towards the opposite gender. So I'm hoping to work with Tarana and the Creative Coalition to really put together something that takes this beyond a hashtag movement. And people can reach me on Twitter. I'm looking for suggestions. I really want this to be about the every woman's voice. I want it to be, this is your movement, women. This is your time. And if I can be the vessel and hold the bullhorn for you guys to shout as loud as humanly possible, then I'm honored to do so. But let's fix this problem.
It's a privilege to be a messenger, isn't it?
Yes, truly.
All right. Alyssa, thank you very much. You and Tarana, what you have continued to have this conversation and what you want to do to move it forward. So it is more than just that. Thank you for joining us.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank
appreciate
you, Robin.
It. Take care.
Yeah, you can really feel the power in her voice.
Yeah. Unmistakable.
Mm-hmm. How do we educate them on, yes, like, some women are going to want you to be aggressive. Some women aren't going to want you to be aggressive. You can ask those questions. Like, it's all about teaching people different societal standards. Of course, that's the problem. But the problem here is that we've never had a dialogue about it, and the movement just went straight to, well, the victim's right 100% of the time, and that's it, instead of the solution. There's still no solutions being discussed. It's still not about, again, how you educate. How do you change that? How do you teach men in power that, look, listen, you're riding high right now. I know you're popping bottles every night. You've been a CEO for 2 years. You're having a great time. But you need to go to mandated therapy by this company because you need to be able to talk out your shit and you need to know exactly how the fuck having this much money and power is affecting you.
If believing the woman is the beginning and the end of a search for truth, then we have left the realm of justice for religion.
That's not what belief survivors means.
Okay, what is that mean?
I'm sorry.
No, let's go ahead, Tarana. Yeah.
When we say believe survivors, it's not believe them without investigation, believe them without interrogation. We have set a precedent in this country of not believing, of thinking that women in particular are lying when they come forward with these allegations, when people come forward with these allegations. So the mantra believe survivors is about, can we start with the premise that people do not often lie about the pain and the trauma of sexual violence? If we start with that premise, that if you believe that it's true, then you can have an investigation. You can have an interrogation of the facts and that kind of thing. This is not to say believe people blanket and don't investigate and don't do anything else besides believe them.
But I also think, too, when you're in a position of power like a Harvey Weinstein, like a Donald Trump, and you have women literally throwing it at you in such a way where we're talking the majority of the women that are in his vicinity probably allow them to treat them like victims. So it's like there has got to be a point to where you have to separate that, you know. And again, I also think that some of these women that use their sexuality to gain power over some of these men, they also have to be taught that, look, you're playing a dangerous game.
Well, I mean, I think that's an antiquated thought. I think that that's the last 30 years is that how do we teach women how to be less rapable?
Me too. The work that I was doing is really about survivors talking to each other. And so how we continue this after this moment is gone is that we continue those conversations and we start talking about, like, what does community healing look like? And I think survivors will be at the forefront of that.
It's not us that need to change. It's not the victims that need to change. And, it's the people victimizing.
But what I am trying
to
tell,
there are women that are in power.
Just because a kid gets hit in the face and gets beat and the next day tells their mom they love them doesn't mean that that's okay. It doesn't mean that that behavior is okay. You don't teach the child to take a punch or to communicate how the hitting them hurts. You teach the parent how not to hit.
But what I'm trying to tell you, though, is these men in power are these men in power, when they are at a party, when they are around women or being introduced to women, these are women that are trying to use their sexuality to get ahead.
Of course.
And what I'm trying to say, though, is if this happens so much, all I'm trying to say is like devil's
advocate. Do you feel people should empathize with those men?
No.
Several women accused Stephen Wynn, chairman and CEO of Wynn Resorts, of decades of sexual misconduct. Wynn pressured employees for naked massages and sex, according to a report in the Wall Street Journal. Wynn denies the accusations, but stepped down from his post as finance chairman of the Republican National Committee. Republican Representative Patrick Meehan will not seek re-election after reports that a former aide filed a sexual harassment claim against him. Mr. Meehan used his congressional office fund to reach a settlement with the aide. He denies that he sexually harassed her, but also calls her his soulmate. Former USA Gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar was sentenced to up to 175 years in prison after more than 150 women accused him of sexual abuse. The sentencing came after victims addressed the court for 7 full days.
Perhaps you have figured it out by now, but little girls don't stay little forever. They grow into strong women that return to destroy your world.
All I'm saying is if you have been around and you have been just taught that you're God, you're better than everyone else, it's like, how do you get through to those people that know you're not when all the people that are around you are treating you
like
that?
Though it sounds crazy, that's why I agree with the empathy thing, because I don't think you can find a solution unless you empathize. You know what I mean?
Right.
You have to be able to put yourself in that person's shoes a little bit, because what people don't understand is if everyone's screaming, nobody gets heard. But if you bring yourself down to somebody's level and you be truly objective, you can actually educate people. You can actually have good dialogue. You can change people's minds. If you don't make it about you, if you stop making it about me and I'm right and this is, I'm on the right side of things, so I'm telling all the good things, instead of saying, let me figure out why you think the way you do, let's figure out how I think the way I do, and let's maybe learn from each other, and this is going to teach us how to be a better society.
Well, just like what Pete brought up,
it's going to teach strength in people that were weak. They learn strength a lot of times through anger,
right?
Because they made the wrong mistake or they were put in a situation where someone took advantage of them. And when you learn strength through anger, you're not learning strength. You're
strength
just
is
learning
quiet.
Anger.
Strength is quiet.
Strength is a quiet thing inside you that you're like, no, I can say no. I can be like, get away from me. It's something you learn, but if you learn it through anger, then you're going to learn
it
a lot.
It comes out the wrong way. You're going to learn a lot more lessons than just that.
Because the violence doesn't end with the act. The violence is also the trauma that we hold after the act. Remember, trauma halts possibility. It serves to impede, stagnate, confuse, and kill. So our work rethinks how we deal with trauma. For instance, we don't believe that survivors should tell the details of their stories all the time. We shouldn't have to perform our pain over and over again for the sake of your awareness. We also try to teach survivors to not lean into their trauma, but to lean into the joy that they curate in their lives instead. And if you don't find it, create it and lean into that. But when your life has been touched by trauma, sometimes trying to find joy feels like an insurmountable task. Now imagine trying to complete that task while world leaders are discrediting your memories, or the news media keeps erasing your experience, or people continuously reduce you to your pain. Movement activates possibility.
Follow my co-host, Brandon Guchon, on Twitter and Instagram at YourBuddyGooch. And Jocelyn Sharp on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Jocelyn Sharp. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Rise to Offend and on Instagram at Rise to Offend Official. And make sure to listen to us every Monday on the Metal Sucks podcast on metalsucks.net. Email us comments, questions, errors we may have made, or any figure you would like us to cover
risetooffend@gmail.com. Discover the widespread changes caused by the Me Too movement. Visit Tarana Burke's website, MeTooMVMT.org. So it's MeTooMVMT.org to discover the message, volunteer, and heal if you have experienced past traumas. Search YouTube for interviews by all the figures we have covered. All content used is copyrighted by owners. Thank you all so much for the reviews on iTunes. These 5-star reviews are helping this show grow, and is all we can ask from you guys. Please, if you listen to the show and appreciate all the hard effort behind it, review the show on iTunes for us. It's a quick click and 5 stars. It truly means the world that you took the time to listen, but review the show as well. Next week, we will conclude our podcast on Me Too. Until then, Repeat Offenders RTO Podcast, signing off.